The following podcast is scheduled for one fall with a 20-minute time limit.
You used to call me on my. You used to. Yeah. You used to call me on my.
Hello and welcome to the first episode of the new Nintendo News Report. I'm Donald Terriel, joined here with Neil Ronahan.
Hey, everybody.
And no time for introductions here when we've really only got about 20 minutes to work with, so let's go right into the news of the weekend, starting with on Friday, the annual QuakeCon, although I think this year they were calling it DoomCon because all the focus was going to be on Doom Eternal, was held in Texas, and at that point, the Switch officially became doomed with the launch of the classic Doom trilogy, the first three games, all coming out right then and there. As if this week wasn't already busy enough for game releases.
I think the coolest thing about the Doom trilogy showing up in the eShop is, one, just those games being playable all on a Nintendo platform. By November, you will be able to play five Doom games on the Switch, which I can't think of the last time even one Doom game was playable on a Nintendo platform. Was there a GBA port? Or something.
That was
the last Doom release not on Switch.
Yeah, it was ports of Doom 1 and 2.
Yeah. But the coolest thing about these games is the pricing. The Doom 1 and Doom 2, which are old PC games that I believe are all pretty much like you can get them for free.
PC. They open source Doom 1, I believe.
Okay. Those games are each $5 a piece, which, like, that's totally fine for Doom 1 and Doom 2. I mean, cue the people who think that virtual console games are overpriced, probably not being happy that Doom 1 and 2 are $5, but, like, that seems all right. And even Doom 3, which is a pretty well-respected 2003 PC showcase, that's only $10. Like, that seems like a great deal.
Yeah, and my chief complaint so far, I mean, I picked up Doom with, I had some gold coins lying around from buying a set of vouchers and Fire Emblem, but have they confirmed there's no way to do the classic Doom cheats in there? Because I feel the need to walk through walls here, and I'm not sure we can do that with Doom.
Yeah, that's the thing that has actually gotten me to not buy any of these games. I have no real affinity for Doom 3. I never really played it. I've heard it's a pretty great 2003 first-person shooter that takes a lot of inspiration from Half-Life, which is just not a thing that I really care to play in 2019. But Doom 1 and 2 I have a lot of nostalgia for. So I was kind of looking forward to just, like, messing with them and doing what I did when I played those games when I was much younger, which was abuse the cheat codes and just kind of explore those worlds and break them in really amusing ways. But it doesn't appear, even if you hook up a USB keyboard, which you can do to, like, do, like, the WASD controls for Doom, but the cheat codes do not work. I believe in the mobile versions, which these are, like, updated versions of, if you bought Doom on iOS ages and ages ago, you now have Doom on iOS in this new version. It's that same release that is now that was previously incompatible with iOS devices, but now it works again because they re-released them.
Yeah,
I believe there's a way to access the cheats in those versions. So maybe there's something that people are missing. I'm not optimistic. It doesn't seem like you can do the cheat codes, which kind of kills the nostalgia glory for me.
Yeah, I'm also waiting to boot up my copy of the original Doom 4. Well, for one thing, Fire Emblem came out the day unlocked, like, 2 hours before, and I'm still working my way through that. But also, they kind of made an error with all of the releases, but seemingly the only one that seems to be a problem for is Switch, because you can't guarantee an internet connection on Switch, and somehow what was intended to be an optional sign into BethesdaNet for achievements and stuff, because there's no online for these releases.
Well, so there is, like, Bethesda has this thing, I believe it's called the Slayers Club.
Yeah.
Which is, like, some kind of, like, I don't know if there's, like, a rewards program tied to it, but just, like, you can have all your Doom information funnel into one account on their website, which is a little bit like Bethesda wants you to play in their environment, but maybe there's some sort of tangible benefit there. I don't know. I shouldn't be giving them the benefit of the doubt. It's kind of a miscue the way that it's implemented, because when you boot up Doom 1 or 2, and it's the same issue with 3? I don't think the same issue is with 3.
I think it is all 3, actually, that it won't let you continue the first time unless you put an email address and a password in or create an account, but it turns out you can pretty much put in like atlanta@olympic.org and it will work.
Yeah. Yeah, it does seem like you can kind of fudge it. Although, I mean, you can do that with really any kind of account like that. Like, I know EA has a habit of doing that with their sports games, and I've gotten to the point where I don't want any more, like, do you want to get this deal in the new Madden? So I put in fake email addresses for my EA account stuff. It's a bummer. I'm glad that Bethesda's responding to it, and it looks like they're going to fix it. Who knows on the ETA on that? We did get some really great memes out of it. So all in all, I think it was worth it.
Yeah, the fan art threads have been glorious for Doom, because I think I've seen interpretations for everything from like Legend of Zelda to Sierra Adventure games.
Yeah,
and I think
Banjo Kazooie as well.
Oh right, the Banjo one, that was great. But it's just amazing that people are going to the effort of modifying ROMs to produce these error messages.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, like, it's a real good joke, and I think once this gets updated, I'm glad that Bethesda made a big dumb error, and we all had a good laugh, and everybody could play whatever Doom they wanted on modern consoles.
Yeah, and it could be worse. We could be on the Xbox 360 or Xbox One, where they got the Doom releases as well, but Doom 1 through 3 were actually backwards compatible games on 360, and that no longer seems to be the case.
Yeah, that's a bummer.
I guess Bethesda wants their money.
Yeah.
That's what it all comes down to.
You know who's not going to get his money? Well,
he won't be getting any more money. Yeah, so the big story at the end of last week, as we mentioned on the last extra long edition of the Nintendo News Report, was that the voice actor for the male Byleth, or the Avatar in Fire Emblem Three Houses, is a bit of a, can I say, a-hole?
I mean, I think to just kind of present it in a just-the-facts way, first off, Chris Niosi seemingly broke an NDA revealing that he was in Fire Emblem Three Houses when I believe that every voice actor was embargoed until like a week or so ago. The second is there's also a history of emotional and physical abuse, so much so that on his personal Tumblr, he has a lengthy, like, I didn't know what I was doing was wrong, it was bad, etc., etc. So in a just the facts way, like, dude admitted to error.
Mm. And it's not like this isn't the first time that we've had a Fire Emblem voice break NDA like this. I believe the voice of Azura in Fates accidentally did the same thing. But Nintendo not only kept her in the game, they brought her back for Shadows of Valentia. She ended up being the voice of God in that game. And so it seems like the abuse is what pushed Nintendo over the edge, because we saw on Friday morning, when there was a trailer released for male Byleth in Fire Emblem Heroes, that they had subbed out the voice for Zach Aguilar, who I believe is on JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, among other things. And Nintendo has since confirmed to us in an official statement that, they're going to be patching in the new voice of Zach for Byleth into Three Houses as well.
The exact quote that we got from Nintendo of America: after assessing the situation, we decided to re-record the characters' voiceovers in Fire Emblem Three Houses and Fire Emblem Heroes with another actor. The new voiceovers will be included in a future patch. So maybe it'll... I know, Donald, you theorized it might be packed in with the Lunatic difficulty update that is coming soon. I would probably think it'll be as soon as they possibly can do it. Yeah. Because it is kind of like it's a cloud hanging over what seems to be an overall well-received And as we'll probably find out as early as, like, this week, what is probably one of the best-selling games in Fire Emblem history.
If not the best, honestly, because there's a non-zero chance that it would outsell Fates day one, which based on the performance of Switch games. And
yeah, like, I think I was talking to some people just about, like, the potential for Three Houses sales, and I think my kind of takeaway with it is that I feel like the floor for this game is, I mean, not that it's like super high, but like the floor is what every other Fire Emblem game has done. The kind of interesting thing to see what happens with Three Houses going forward is that I think the ceiling for the game is higher than any other Fire Emblem game has had a ceiling. So like this could be a huge, gigantic, like, series redefining success. Or it could just be like, oh, hey, it did better than Fates. Like, we're going to kind of, it's going to keep being in the same wheelhouse as it has been since Awakening.
Yeah, I think almost, like, it's probably already past Echoes at this point, probably just on digital preloads. Yeah. So
yeah, I was poking around sales. I didn't realize that Echoes was, like, half as many sales as Fates. But it also, Echoes did come out after the Switch came out, which every 3DS game hurt a lot. For not being on the Switch.
Unless it was Pokemon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like the floor for this is going to be Awakening, and then the ceiling is God knows. Like, I think one prominent internet message board had a question: do you think Fire Emblem could ship 5 million copies? The way pretty much every franchise has gone on Switch to this point, probably.
Yeah. Like that, and that would be huge. That would be massive for this series. And I mean, my response to having Fire Emblem Three Houses come out was do more of the extra content in Marvel Ultimate Alliance 3. Still have not started. I booted it. I watched the opening cutscene. That's as far as I've gotten in Three Houses so far.
I haven't had my first real battle yet. I've had the mock battle with the rest of the houses though, and yeah, it's a Fire Emblem ass Fire Emblem game, which is really all I want at this point.
Yeah, it's been fun seeing people be very excited about it and really enjoying it. I'll be curious to see how discussion goes about it, because it seems like the second half has a little bit of a drop off.
And I'm looking forward to seeing if there is a fourth way to go with this game, what that's going to end up entailing. Because this is the kind of game that seems ripe for multiple playthroughs. But yeah, and I'm sticking to normal casual for mine because I'm not insane. Unlike my roommate. All right. So is it bad time to come out with a strategy RPG on Nintendo Switch? But that seems to be what's going to be happening this week, because the big release of the week, and seemingly the only, you know, readily available retail release, is going to be Mutant Year Zero Road to Eden, which is
a super beloved, well-respected, tactical board game. That came out, I believe, last year on PC. Might have been an early access title. I know that David Lloyd, over of the Thirsty Mage and other Nintendo Report goodness, he speaks very highly of this game. I think he'll probably be reviewing it. I don't believe the review is underway yet. But yeah, it's an isometric tactical turn-based RPG. So if you like that stuff, I've heard nothing but great things about it. It just seems more... It seems more Obsidian RPG. Humorously, an Obsidian RPG is coming out the week after this, and Pillars of Eternity coming to Switch. It seems a little bit more like that than JRPG, but still cool.
Yeah, so that'll be out, I believe that's out on Tuesday. And the Switch version will have all of the seemingly all the DLC in it. So
yeah. I know one game I'm looking forward to this week that I know we have a review that should be going up on the Tuesday launch day. That is Forager, which was revealed at I think it was the January Nintendo of Europe Indies video, which seems to be like kind of a 2D Minecraft in a way. It seems like it doesn't hold your hand and you're kind of exploring, or shall I say foraging. Yeah, I'll be curious. I know Jordan Rudek is on that review, and that should be coming out as soon as the embargo is up.
Mm-hmm. Yep, and then, unfortunately, the game we can't really avoid, although it's actually the most expensive game coming out next week, Omega Labyrinth Life.
Yeah.
Which
is the boob roguelike dungeon crawler.
Yeah. I was actually really confused about what, because I heard about Labyrinth Life and Omega Labyrinth Life. And then somebody explained it to me that Labyrinth Life is the PS4 version that has all the that has the fan service toned way down to get around Sony content requirements.
Yep.
So the Switch version is, I believe the term they used was feature complete. we do not know who is going to be reviewing this game. There is a campaign to get James Jones to do it, but I don't think so.
I think John Lindemann is the person that might. I don't even think we formally requested a code for it, because it's one of those things where, like, if something just shows up in the email, I'll probably just forward it to Lindemann. Because there's no one on staff that seems to seriously want to review this game. So when in doubt, send it to someone at Radio Free Nintendo.
Yeah. And I'm sure he'll give it the same love and attention that he gave The Conduit when he gave that an 8.5.
Of course, 8.5. There's a few other, Chroma Squad is a game that's coming out. It's another, kind of tactical turn-based RPG thing. We already have a review of that up from David Lloyd, so go check that out on NintendoWorldReport.com. It's a super Power Rangers-inspired, kind of goofy RPG. It's from the guys who made Knights of Pen and Paper, which was a super goofy D&D-inspired RPG. So they seem to have an aesthetic, and I guess it's cool that they're kind of keep on doing that thing. A few other games coming out that I think warrant some attention. Trine 3 is coming to Switch, which... Trine 4 looks really good. However, if you look at some of the Trine 4 coverage, what I've seen is, hey, we realized we screwed up with Trine 3, so we're going to make Trine 4 good. I never played Trine 3, so I probably never will.
They tried to turn it into a 3D platformer, and...
Oh, that was what they did.
Yeah, and it did not quite go according to plan.
Yeah. I mean, shoot your shot, but it's cool. Like, Trine 4 looks great. Trine 3, don't care too much. And then the release of Pandemic, which is from the same people who brought out the mediocre versions of Carcassonne and Settlers of Catan. But the thing with Pandemic is that would actually work well in couch co-op. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing. I don't know if I'll be reviewing it or if someone else. I know, like, you know, Jordan Perry, although they're both new dads. I don't know if that means that their likelihood of playing Pandemic with friends is higher or lower. But I'm eagerly curious to see what's up with Pandemic and how it will work as a couch co-op game, because I think that could be a really great way to play that board game in a more streamlined, less partsy fashion.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I'll be looking at or interested in at least seeing how it does this week on Switch is The Church in the Darkness, which got announced, I think, last week for Switch, and it's basically Jonestown as adventure game.
Oh, that's interesting.
You're trying to save your nephew from a killer cult in South America that maybe is a you know, trying to save the world from itself, but or maybe they're just, you know, Jim Jones and all that stuff.
Yeah, if I didn't kind of have a loosely harsh I'm just accepting that I don't really like adventure games that much. Like, it's weird. I like the concepts of a lot of adventure games, but when it comes down to it, I'd rather just play Phoenix Wright.
Yeah. Or we can hope that they call up Danganronpa from the PlayStation.
Danganronpa just makes me really depressed. Great games. Never going to touch that series again. They're very, very dark.
Considering how fast I noped out of Oninaki, I'm surprised I got through all three Danganronpa games.
Last game I want to kind of call attention to is Solo Islands of the Heart. I have not played this game, however, I watched a trailer for it and kind of dug into it a little bit more, and it's kind of enchanting. It has a very, like, kind of serene, as the name implies, an island theme. It seems a little bit like 2D Zelda from a 3D perspective kind of thing. You're kind of exploring these different islands and solving block puzzles and things like that. And it seems to have some kind of driving force of a narrative through it that's about, like, love and loss and all that jazz. I haven't seen much about it as far as, like, is it good or not. But that strikes me as a game that might be surprisingly really great but I have not had the chance to dig deeper into it. So it comes out later this week, so there will be buzz about it, and maybe we'll have something up on Nintendo World Report, or maybe you can check out elsewhere, because other people are probably covering it, I hope.
All right, so with that, we are coming up on the time limit here, so thank you very much for coming out, Neil, and we will see you later this week, probably with Nintendo Financials, because those are coming out on Tuesday morning.
Woo! Yeah, money.
All right. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Ever since I left the city, you got a reputation for yourself now.